So speaking of like small companies that has a rapid development and edge against all the competitors, recently we've also heard a lot of news about Grok. So just to clarify, this is not the AI model by Twitter or X. This is a hardware company that's specializing in manufacturing ARPUs. So maybe Tracy, if you have any more information, please share right now, maybe.
So I also don't really understand the benefits of having a very fast response. So currently, I don't mind if I wait for a few seconds, and the large language model gives me an accurate response instead of a fast but random one. I mean, of course, the faster, the better. So there is some scientific research. I think one is a paper published by my advisor. So they studied the latency of the response. And how does that impact the user? And their user is data analysts. And they find that even a delay as short as 500 milliseconds, which is 0.5 second, it will dramatically influence the user experience. And data analysts lose engagement. So since this is also the case for other interactions like browsing or interacting with a chatbot, so what do you think? Do you care about speed?
I think speed has some like speed is definitely important in some like application like scenarios. For example, like the Rabbit R1, like the AI hardware, and some others like the AI Ping released a few weeks ago. I think those since it's a hardware product, so you definitely don't want like a very obvious latency in a, on top of the like hardware user experience. So I can see in that case the speed or like the short latency could be very important in terms of user experience. But from what I read is that the Grok seems to get rid of a lot of the like inference or like some of the more like human-like processing in the AI modeling, so that's how it gets like so much faster. So I definitely need to do more research on that, but it seems like maybe Grok is faster because it's, you know, kind of like deviating towards the traditional language model, but leaning towards more like the, I don't know, like the traditional like Google search type of behavior. So yeah, I guess it really depends on the user's preference if you want a more like a natural language like experience or a faster like machine like experience.
Yeah, since you mentioned Rabbit, do you remember why they are so fast?
I think they haven't said they are like faster than the competitors, but from what I read is like one of the ways they can ensure that at least like for all the devices you are getting a pretty like a consistent experience is that for each hardware terminal you would have a dedicated virtual machine or like a cloud machine running like individually for that. So it's like a one-on-one cloud experience in that way. So that might explain like why how the hardware slash software experience could be consistent for Rabbit. It's not like everything is connected to a one single central server.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Speaking of like hardwares, I think recently there have been a lot of like dramas and news regarding AR devices. As everyone probably has heard, whether you are like a tech enthusiast or not, but Apple Vision Pro seems to catch everyone's attention, but that's already like a month ago. So the more like recent updates I've read is that people are starting to like return, or at least many people are returning their Vision Pro purchases. Some of the reasons I read are like, well, first of all, it's just way too expensive. Like price is probably the most important factor that people consider when making a purchase decision. And I've also read something like it's still like too heavy or wearing it like long time every day. I've seen some like drawings online, like where people have proposed like a Vision Air. So it'd be more like a glass or like a goggle itself instead of a whole like helmet setup right now. So I know Tracy, you've considered a question like what should be the right like market value of AR. So maybe could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Oh yeah, so I just came across this tweet on X. So it claims that the major market of AR should be the productivity. So the market value should be the combined of all those screens, laptop, tablets, phones. So perhaps we can also start with enterprise users, like the schools. They buy those AR helmets, just like 40 years ago, they buy Apple II. So for those kids, for education usage. But I'm not sure like what can those AR do that cannot be done on a computer. So can you imagine like why a school wants to buy such expensive devices for kids?
That's a good question. Yeah, I've actually had some experience like working in a school, like summer camps and like some other education activities, yeah, throughout the past like 10 years. So yeah, what I've observed is that school, they usually like, if it's like a one single device in a classroom or in a school, like a digital whiteboard or something like that, they will love to spend like big amount of money on that. But if it's an individual device for students, they usually go for like the cheapest option, whether it's like a $200 Chromebook, or if it's a tablet, then they would just buy like the base model of iPad. Like, you probably wonder like why they are still selling like the older models of iPad online. Well, that's mostly for like the K-12 schools. Yeah, so I think Vision Pro or like the later Vision or AR products by Apple or similar companies, if they're going to stay with a similar price, like above $1,000, then it's probably just going to be a one single piece in the classroom where everyone takes turn to try it instead of, you know, every student gets one.
Interesting. I thought schools should have received some subsidies from the government, so they are not that price sensitive. So, but from what you talked, they are still, I mean, they still very care about the price.
Yeah, I think once you have like dozens of students in like one class or like one school year, then yeah, the cost like quickly adds up, I think. Yeah, so that's why they still go with like the cheapest laptop or tablet they can get.
Makes sense.
Yep. All right, so just to, let's see, wrap up the AI section. So there's also been very recent news, like probably 2 days ago, on the cloud, newer cloud models. So they've released like two separate models. The most powerful one, called Cloud Opus, is slightly better than the GPT-4. And I believe the middle one, called Cloud Sonnet, it's like about the same as GPT-4, probably like better in some area, but worse in the others. Like, I will attach the official comparison chart they produce later on. And yeah, and it seems like what they claim is the newer models are more like energy or computational efficient compared to the GPT ones. And I've also heard rumors that the GPT-5 and I believe the Llama 3 by Meta, so those two will be the most powerful ones. They are going to be released probably sometime in the July, mid of the summer. Yeah, so it seems there's been some like great outlook on the development of models. So what's your view on like the just never stopping train of AI here, Tracy?
Yeah, so I just wonder why they all have the same pricing strategy. it seems it's all $20 per month. So imagine if we have different smartphones. So smartphones have very different price ranges, so users can choose from. So do you have any idea why there is no company that wants to set their price like $10 per month to attract more users?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I haven't paid for Perplexity yet. So do you know what their price is? Is it also
$20?
$20?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So one way I would look at this is maybe here, like, first of all, I think the $20 price is just they didn't consider like the profitability at all. Like, I'm pretty sure like everyone's still like losing money at this point. It's more like you want to have the same price as the other competitors so that people think like at least your product has about the same performance or functions as the others. I think it's the price here is more like the price is like one of the features instead of like a very objective like metric or like a measurement of the whole package. So that'll be my guess. It's like I feel like at this point, like even if you're setting the price at $30, you may still lose like profits. So I feel like people are just trying to keep the same price as others just to show that, you know, our product is about as powerful as the others. So that's just my wild guess. Yeah.
But I just don't feel enough motivation for me to switch from ChatGPT to cloud. So since you've already tried cloud, how do you feel? Can you tell the difference between it and ChatGPT?
Yeah, good question. I just tested so I gave both cloud and ChatGPT like a chart. It's like a business chart, and the answers they gave are pretty similar. So this is testing on the newest cloud models, the mid one versus ChatGPT 4. So yeah, they're supposed to be perform about the same. One good reason I could think of that people might pick one over the other is just purely like visual, like aesthetics. So cloud, I think it has more like a traditional like newspaper like, or you could say like a consumer visual design. It has this, you know, brownish or pinkish background color with I don't know what the exact font is, but it's kind of similar to like Times New Roman, so it's like a newspaper font. So I feel like a lot of people, especially English speaking world, might prefer that. It also makes the product seems like more human centered. So that'll be my like own personal view.
Interesting. Yeah, I did not think like UI will play such a big role.
Yeah, that's also goes back to our initial like discussion about Perplexity. I think their like UI is like even one step ahead of like ChatGPT in terms of like how like, you know, geeky or like how futuristic it looks like. So maybe that's the reason a lot of people actually prefer that, especially those people like working within the business and like spend a lot of time on social media. They probably prefer the tech looking user interface. Yeah,
I see. Yeah, but I cannot afford like more than one subscriptions. Imagine if you have ChatGPT, Perplexity, and perhaps another one. That's a lot.
That's crazy. Yeah, that reminded me of the earlier days, like over 10 years ago. You remember like when first there was only one like streaming service like Netflix. So it's cheaper just to pick that over the whole cable. It's like $100 per month, but Netflix is only like $10. But later on, like everyone's releasing their streaming service and they have their own exclusive content. So to get a whole thing, you know, to subscribe to like five different services again. So kind of a similar situation.
Yeah. You also remind me that I subscribed to Midjourney. Perhaps I should cancel it.
Yeah. Midjourney. Yeah. I think unless they do something really, truly like groundbreaking, I feel like otherwise all the more general models are going to like catch up eventually. Yeah.
But currently it still generates more photorealistic images than ChatGPT. So I keep it for a while.
Yeah. All right. So let's do our latest last two news here. So those two are all like kind of Chinese related. So first one is the start of Didi, like the ride sharing app. And the second one is a single very recent one, probably just happened like today. Saying Google, or not Google, but like a former Google employee got arrested today in California. So maybe you could provide some details first on those.
Yeah, so which one? So the Didi one is not news. It's just I read an old book and it told the starting story of Didi. So can you imagine if you designed a Didi software and you don't have passengers, you don't have drivers, how do you start? Okay, suppose there are 10 drivers on the app now. Do you think a passenger will download an app if there are only 10 drivers? So how are you going to get them?
That's a good question. It's a very simple, I would imagine, maybe just like a link to a phone number or something, because I read like about the DoorDash, like the delivery app, one of the largest one in the United States. When they first started, they also don't have a platform, so they're just like having a probably like one single phone number on their app, and you call them and they will like figure out something on their own, like without the use of like a database or something. So would that be the same case for Didi at the beginning?
I think DoorDash is slightly better because the restaurants are already there, and yes, customers, they know those restaurants. So DoorDash just delivers those orders. Of course, the more dashers, the better. But if they run out of dashers, they can always find someone, or they just deliver those orders themselves. I believe those founders did that at the very beginning. But for Didi, I feel the problem is slightly harder, because if you don't have enough passengers, then those drivers are not incented to download your app. And if there are not enough drivers, you are not going to have any passengers. So it's kind of like a deadlock. So how do you break the lock?
Wow. Good question. I don't know much about like ride sharing business. What I read mostly in tech history is on like meal delivery. So I don't know, I would imagine they start with some like a very good promotion, or that would just be my guess.
Yeah, kind of. So they try to get some drivers on board, and then they hire someone to just hire taxis all the day. So make sure those drivers get money from the app, and then perhaps they will recommend more drivers. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I would definitely recommend a TV show. I believe it's called Super Pumped, if I remember correctly. It's about the earlier days of Uber, so the US counterpart to Didi. From what I watched in the show and also what I read about Didi, it seems like those were like the golden days of VC-backed startups. You just have like endless streams of cash to burn to start like a business platform like this from ground zero. So yeah, but from like nowadays, it seems like if you want to do some startups in like AI, we'll probably just have to figure out the revenue model from the very beginning to make sure we're profitable. So yeah, definitely probably like a better case for the founders, because yeah, we can have a more healthier like growth model. And yeah, let's just spend maybe the last 2 minutes on the last news here, the arrestment. I read a little bit today. It seems like it's pretty, the funniest thing I found out is like he was, I think, doing a startup pitch maybe in China, and they took some photos of the presentation, and yeah, it might be the simplest PowerPoint slides that I've ever seen at a startup pitch, just like some default fonts of black and red color, like large Chinese characters describing very high level information. Just seems pretty interesting.
Interesting. So you mean you saw the presentation slides?
I think it was a public a group startup pitch at like formerly known as like YC China, now like TG Chuantan, I think. Yeah, it was just like large almost like poster like fonts just saying things like, we are the only like Chinese startup that's on par with like Google. Well, that's partly because, you know, he got all the information and technology from Google. Yeah.
Yeah, so, that's crazy. I think he's too confident.
Yeah. Do you have any like additional information?
So first, I think we should definitely condemn his behavior. It's unlawful. And if he really wants to build his startup, perhaps he should resign from Google first and wait until the non-competitive agreement expires. I'm not sure if they have that at Google. And then he can go back to China and build his startup. I think there's nothing wrong with that. But I think this guy has copied those internal documents and participated in all those venture capital events while he was a Google employee. So I read from Wall Street Journal that he even has someone swipe his card into Google's building to pretend he's still in US. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. That also reminded me of, I think there was a former employee at Apple car division, which is non-existent right now, but it was happened a few years ago. He stole a bunch of like critical information documents and went back to one of the largest like EV maker in China. I believe it was XPeng, and kind of helped their like automatic driving division. So yeah, this is definitely not the first case and probably won't be the last one. Yeah, so yeah, I think here I will just be a friendly reminder to our listeners. Yeah, definitely don't attempt any of this kind of behavior. It's not just like unethical, but also it could lead to like very serious legal consequences. Jail time is definitely like within reach. Yeah,
that's so sad.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's pretty much all we need to discuss. I will just do a Easter egg section on my own as I try the sweet green experience from listening to a podcast episode, tech podcast episode. Yeah, but that's all for our February and March recap. So we'll release the segments like gradually, probably weekly on all the channels we have, and definitely looking forward to recording again with Tracy probably in early April. Yeah,
okay.
So that's all.
Good.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.